Thank you for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the best bits from City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Hello, hope you're okay. Let me just move my microphone there. Ah, oh, that's better. Well, thank you once again for downloading the Dunkcast, or the Dunkcast, which is the podcast from the City Talk 105.9 Breakfast Show. I'm Duncan Barks. Thank you as ever for your continued support. What will you hear over the next 30 minutes or so? Well, Nick Clegg, leader of the Liberal Democrats, was on my show during the week. He was making a visit to Liverpool. We talked about all kinds of things, why he was visiting the city. And you might actually think, more importantly, what he watches on the TV on a Saturday night. The X Factor or Strictly Come Dancing. Hear my conversation with the leader of the Lib Dems, Nick Clegg, in a few minutes' time. There's also another Duncan's Donut. It features Kelly Brook. Some people in London who run a transport organisation getting a little bit hot under the collar about Kelly Brook's buns, or quite possibly her baps. It'll all become apparent when you hear Duncan's Donut. We also hear from Amal Rajan from the Independent newspaper. Amal is a journalist, columnist and commentator with the Independent. We talk politics, including the fact that MPs would like a £40,000 pay rise once the reforms come in for the MPs' expenses system. You couldn't make it up, could you? Well, it's true. Hear what Amal and I had to say about that. Also, during the week, I spoke to Trevor Skempton. He's a Liverpool architect, and we were talking about how Newcastle Stadium has been renamed in order to make a bit more money, or not, as the case might be. Hear what Trevor and I had to say a little bit later on. Would you like to hear or see Anfield renamed to promote a brand? Maybe Ginster's Pasties, or Goodison Park renamed as the McDonald's Stadium? Hear what Trevor and I had to say about that. And finally, during the week on the City Talk Breakfast Show, we did something about words. Words or nicknames that you might use to describe parts of your body or parts of your partner's body. It turned out on the radio, I couldn't really read any of them out. It was all about a story about some bankers who were suing a Japanese bank because the blokes in the bank were saying to these female bankers, "We quite like the look of your honkers," of course referring to their breasts. I asked you to text in nicknames for parts of your body or maybe your other half's body, and you didn't let me down. Now, we did say that we would read them out on the podcast, which we'll do at the very end of the podcast. It is not for the faint-hearted. That's what's happening in the Dunkcast, the Dunkcast for this week. Thank you for downloading it and enjoy.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
Later on today, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Nick Clegg, will be visiting our city, and he's here with us now. Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Good to talk to you. You're in Liverpool later today. I know a number of visits in store, including Alderhay Children's Hospital. What's the background to your visit there?
Well, Alderhay, of course, is not only a fantastic hospital for everybody in Liverpool and the North West. It's a national institution, probably the best children's hospital in the whole country, and you know, I'm told that a lot of the current buildings are a bit old, not quite fit for purpose. So there is this application to rebuild the whole thing, turn it into what they call a children's health park. And I think, you know, this is something that everybody in Liverpool and elsewhere supports. And I wanted to see it for myself, speak to the people at the hospital, see how those plans are progressing, see what I can do and other politicians can do from all parties, because I assume this is something that everybody's going to support, to push this along so that Alderhay, you know, retains and maintains its status as a fantastic children's hospital.
You're also making a keynote speech this afternoon at the Core City Summit, which is happening at the BT Convention Centre. One of the themes is Beyond Recession, a New Vision, a Vision for City Economies. What do you plan to say this afternoon?
Well, I think the core cities, and the Liberal Democrats now run the vast majority of big cities outside London, not just Liverpool, but my own city of Sheffield, Hull, Newcastle, Bristol. You know, we share leadership in Birmingham, Leeds, the list goes on. So we've got a big, big responsibility in some of the most difficult, the areas which have been hit hardest by this recession to help people get back on their feet. And there are a number of things that we are keen to do. Firstly, to where possible, you know, loosen loosen the strings that keep everybody under control from Whitehall, and say to government down in London, look, let local authorities, let local communities do their own thing. Let them raise a bit of money if they need to do that, so they can spend it on the things that we need to do, whether it's investing in transport. Or education or our NHS, which not only creates jobs today, but of course creates the transport and the public services we need for the future, but also a particular focus on giving young people a sense of hope. I mean, one in five young people between the ages of 18 and 20 and 24 in this country are now out of work. That is so depressing. We're creating a really poisonous legacy for our youngsters in this recession, and there are lots of things that we can do locally in those cities in order to give youngsters a chance to find internships, to find apprenticeships, to go back into training, to make sure that they're active and they don't sort of feel that they've got nothing to do and there's no future for them.
Well, one of the casualties of the recession is the banking industry and the banks in this country. Your Treasury spokesman, Vince Cable, is doing the rounds this morning saying that the timing of the breakup of the banks by Alistair Darling, which he's announcing later today, the timing's all wrong. Well, just elaborate a bit more on that for me.
Well, we agree that the bank should be split up, but I think where we disagree with the government is on two things. Firstly, you shouldn't be rushing to flog off the good bits of the banks when we, the taxpayer, own them. We want to have a proper return on this. So instead of flogging them off in a rush in order to make a quick sale, we should be waiting until the market's recovered, market conditions are better, so that we, the taxpayers, who poured hundreds of billions of pounds into these banks in order to save them, get a proper return. And secondly, if we're going to split them up, we should split them up properly in a way that means that they never ever get into the mess they got ever again. And the way we think you should do that is by basically splitting up casino investment banking, the banking down in the City of London where people play fast and loose with their money for big bucks on the markets. Let them do that, but don't let them do that with ordinary people's savings. In other words, split that off from high street banking, the banks, the everyday banks that we, that you and I rely on to stick a card into a wall, get the money out, make small, put our deposits, take out small loans. Separate those two things completely, rather than just rushing now to sell off some fancy parts of the banks in order to make a poor sale.
Okay, a few more questions for you this morning, Nick. By the way, it's City Talk Breakfast here at City Talk 105.9. You mentioned this earlier, Liverpool has a Lib Dem city council, yet all Labour MPs across the city. Do you think that'll change at the ballot box next year?
Yeah, I really hope so. I think that particularly in Liverpool Wavertree, we've got a very strong chance of getting Colin Eldridge, our excellent prospective parliamentary candidate, elected to Westminster. And this is part of a bigger change in so many parts of the country. Places like Liverpool that traditionally have returned Labour MPs, election in, election out, for generations now, are starting to think to themselves, well, maybe we should do something different. This hasn't really worked out for us. Labour's disappointed. The Labour government is clearly running out of steam, running out of ideas, running out of road. So I think people are looking around for a different approach.
Let's touch on the expenses scandal for a second, because tomorrow is a significant day. We got Sir Christopher Kelly releasing his report on reforming MPs' expenses. Obviously, we know you've been asked to pay some money back. I think it's in excess of 900 quid for gardening. What do you think we'll actually see tomorrow? Something radical to change the system, or just a box-ticking exercise to satisfy the public's anger?
No, I think from what I've heard, in the press and stuff, I think what we'll see is something very significant, which is, for instance, something I've been advocating for ages now. I remember first suggesting it to Gordon Brown and David Cameron well before the expenses scandal broke, and they both said, oh, no, we can't possibly do that. So I'm delighted to hear that Christopher Kelly's now proposing this, namely taking MPs out of the property game altogether, so that MPs simply can't use taxpayers' money to buy and sell properties. Because, yes, you're right, there's been a lot of focus on, duck houses and MPs repaying this and repaying that. The two biggest abuses by far which I still think haven't been properly addressed, and certainly MPs who committed these abuses haven't really paid, paid the taxpayer back properly, is MPs turning themselves from servants of their constituents into spivvy property speculators, so-called flipping from one property to the next, doing them up, paid for by the taxpayer, selling them on for a fat profit, pocketing the profit, and in some cases, avoiding capital gains tax. That is outrageous. And the only way that I think you can deal with that is by taking MPs, as I say, out of the property game altogether, so that they simply can't buy a property subsidised by the taxpayer at all.
I think you're right, but also there's an issue that needs to be addressed. We had the MP for Birkenhead on, Frank Field, a couple of weeks ago on this show, and he was talking about his housekeeper and also his gardener. I mean, you yourself claimed £900 in expenses for a gardener. You know, there are people out there in this city and across the whole of the country who think, why on earth do you need a gardener?
Yeah, no. That people feel, you know, the whole system's bonkers. Of course, I can totally understand that. In my case, for what it's worth, you know, I have a house in a suburban part of Sheffield. If I'm not there a lot of the week, because of course I'm in Westminster, I need to somehow make sure the garden isn't on eyesore. And I tell you, my garden, you can come and visit it. It's no great sort of fancy park. It's just a bog standard garden. So there are big issues about this. But as I say, I think you've got to take MPs out of the property game altogether.
Yep.
You've got to really, really clamp down big time on all of these expenses, which have basically been used by MPs for generations to supplement their income. And so far, it sounds to me as if Christopher Kelly is prepared to do that. The key thing now is that MPs shouldn't unpick this. We've got to just bite the bullet, accept this, you know, this tough medicine, and you know, introduce these reforms hook, line and sinker.
OK, Nick, final question. I'm reading this morning that Gordon Brown has revealed in an interview with GQ magazine that he prefers the X Factor to Strictly Come Dancing. Which one do you watch in the Clegg household? And what do you reckon of John and Edward? What do you make of them?
I'm really ashamed to say I haven't been following either. I've got young kids. The programmes clash. I know X Factor's doing better in the ratings thing, and I've obviously been reading what Simon Cowell and others have been saying about those about the duo. But I haven't been watching it myself.
So what do you watch on a Saturday night? I'm intrigued by this. You're supposed to be a man of the people and in touch. If you're not watching the X Factor, surely you should be watching Strictly Come Dancing.
Well, I might change a habit of a lifetime, but I haven't been doing it so far.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
These spy cars, they park them up in between
the line
of parked cars.
Yeah.
Unsuspecting motorists aren't aware that they're there, and they've been receiving fines and nasty letters in the post.
I think it's a smart car, isn't it? Is it one of the smart cars that's got almost like a little periscope that pops up and it buzzes around spying on people, then sends them a nasty letter with a bill? What's Wirral Council's rationale behind this?
They say it's legitimate and they're catching people parking on double yellow lines. Yeah. You know, I don't think it's for any other reason apart from, let's see if we can make some more money.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
And now, the Expert Factor.
Amol Rajan from the Independent newspaper joins us every Thursday morning to talk about politics. Good morning.
Morning, Duncan.
Good as ever to talk to you. Amol, I wonder if you can help me out. I'd like a £40,000 pay rise.
Well, that should be easy. I've got a few people in my back pocket called taxpayers who are very keen indeed to dole it out to you. I'm sure I can get that through Parliament. Quite extraordinary this, Duncan. So Christopher Kelly turned up yesterday with his long-awaited reports, the classic New Labour technique or tactic. This we've got a big scandal, commissioner report, and everyone waits and waits and waits. Not allowed to talk about it until the report comes along. Then it comes along and it's completely ludicrous, and you get the completely ludicrous response. And what we had yesterday was a bunch of Labour MPs in particular, but actually people on all sides of the House, so Labour, Tory, Lib Dem, and indeed some of the smaller nationalist parties, saying that the only way in which MPs could regain the trust of the people is if we paid them a much bigger salary, something like £90,000 or £100,000, which, I don't know about you, is certainly more than I get paid and probably ever will get paid.
Yep.
And I imagine it's probably out of the brackets of most of your, most if not all of your listeners. So it was a very, very weird response from the MPs, and it suggests that they're still susceptible to the headlines, which I'm sure we'll see for days and days and days in the run-up to the election, which is that they still don't get it. They still don't understand why the public is cheesed off. They still don't understand why the public thinks that they're already well enough paid, and they're still way out of touch with public opinion, which is not a good state for a democracy to be
in. These people are supposed to be elected representatives of various parts of the country. They're supposed to speak for various communities. communities have their finger on the pulse, and it shows yet again with a mere suggestion that they're thinking, oh, I wonder if we can get a 40 grand pay rise through, suggests that they haven't learned anything and they haven't got a clue.
And the very basic thing is when they get this job, they know what the salary that they're going to get is going to be. I mean, they know that, I mean, presumably, they think that if they're, you know, if they're eligible for an extra 40K a year, they reckon they could get about 40K a year fiddling expenses, which is astonishing. I mean, I really have to say, I think a few of us in Westminster, and to a few of us talking about this in the bars of Central London yesterday, we were talking about how shocked we were that they seemed so insensitive to the public criticism. And it's gone beyond, it's interesting how this whole stage is, this whole scandal has evolved. It's gone beyond the initial stage of shock at the, you know, at how thieving some of the MPs were, to going now to a stage where really it's about kind of trying to find some way of getting MPs to agree to the reforms that people like Christopher Kelly and people like another man called Legg have implemented. But it's going to be very difficult to get these reforms through Parliament if you've got a huge number of MPs who are still saying, actually, no thanks, we want to get paid a huge amount more money. And the reason is I know we're about to talk about Cameron and Europe, I imagine. The reason it's a big problem is because it reveals a huge gulf between the leadership of the parties, which have to be seen to be in touch with public opinion, and what's going on at the grassroots level and what's going on with the backbench MPs. And suddenly, Cameron and his backbenchers are slightly out of step on this issue, and Gordon Brown and his backbenchers are slightly out of step on this issue. And it doesn't look like, between now and the next election, that chasm is going to be bridged, not least because a lot of Labour MPs, without getting too presumptive, a lot of Labour MPs think they're going to be out of a job come next May.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barnes.
There was a cat on the fourth floor, and it was literally managed to get onto the balcony, and it was squealing away, and it looked like it was doomed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, this big hero fire officer comes along, and they get the thing, and they go all the way up to the fourth floor, and they grab the cat, and it's like a big, and they all live happily ever after. So well done, Merseyside Fire Brigade.
And I bet there are people gathering in the street below more concerned about the cat than any human beings that might have been inside.
Well, it's funny because some of them actually laughed because they weren't sure whether they actually saved the cat first or the people that were on the roof, and they were having a laugh and having a toss up which one to save. And I think actually the cat got saved first, but don't quote me on that.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
St James's Park has been renamed SportsDirect.com and St James's Park. Well, what's your take on this?
Well, I think this is a very big story, and it's one that's been bubbling along for years. I mean, when I first went to watch Everton years ago, Everton and Liverpool were the last clubs to allow advertising in, with the exception of Clock in the Corner that said Littlewood Stores.
Okay.
Their instinct was that advertising would somehow cheapen what would now be called their own brand. Mm. Now, they went the way of everybody else. You get shirt sponsoring. We all remember Hafnia, which I think was some kind of cooked meat, sponsored Everton. And a lot of us were worried about this. And going back again, I remember watching... there are two things that happened in America, which we think is the source of this kind of thing. First of all, the Los Angeles Olympics didn't have advertising in the stadium. They banned it.
Okay.
It was all about sponsorship and tiny little badges.
Yeah.
They cleaned up the stadium completely and had quite a dramatic effect. And that was a very commercial Olympics. It actually made money, which other Olympics don't. But they didn't have advertising in the stadium. And around about the same time, you'll remember Dallas, the program.
Yeah.
Now, I always remember that in the opening title sequence of Dallas, they showed a big stadium.
Yes, they did.
And it was Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
Yeah.
Now, what did it have written on the pitch? It didn't have Coca-Cola.
No.
But in big letters on the pitch, it had Cowboys.
Yeah.
In other words, the main brand was the team itself.
Yes.
Now, we come back to the current day, and you've got this extraordinary story from Newcastle. Newcastle have suffered maybe 50 million loss by being relegated, which they'll only really recoup if they get promoted again, which may well happen.
Yeah.
But Newcastle are an example of the caution that Liverpool and Everton fans should exercise in wishing for another multimillionaire to come in, because it's mismanagement on a vast scale.
Mm.
Now, the brand of Newcastle United and St James's Park are one of the things, that the assets the club has. If you trivialise that brand, or, you know, for short-term gain, you will drive the business further and further down.
Mm-hmm. It's a quick buck, isn't it?
It's a very quick buck. Now, people talk about one example, the Emirates. Now, the Emirates seems to have succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new stadium. It's a vast global brand in itself. Emirates, they're like Coca-Cola or something. So Arsenal are themselves being associated with a big player. Mm. But, you know, in the Mail story, you can be a big player. Going back to Dallas, and I assume this is a different stadium, FC Dallas in North American soccer, as they call it, play in Pizza Hut Park. For those of us who are contemplating with dread the possibility of the Tesco Dome, you know, be afraid, very afraid. Oh, some of us went to Nuremberg a couple of years ago and watched Everton play in the Easy Credit Stadium. Mm. And I wonder whether that helps the profile of FC Nuremberg. Another little issue on this, Everton, I'm talking about Everton because obviously that I know that better, although I did work in Newcastle for a long time and was associated with the club up there. Everton a few years ago, I think in response to gentle pressure from fans, because we had mentioned it, took the advertising off the blue and white crisscross on the front of the Bullens Road stand.
Okay.
And I think, and it was given a coat of paint, and it looks tremendous. So that when you see that in a picture, everybody knows it's Everton and it's Goodison Park. Mm. So Everton there recognised there was something in their own brand that would be seen in China or Thailand or anywhere else that was worthy of keeping, rather than just covering it with ads. So I'm not saying that I know better than the people, but I think you've hit the nail on the head where you said, beware of the very fast buck being earned at the expense of, we're hoping our football clubs are going to be around for our children, our grandchildren.
Yeah.
And if somebody damages the brand, you know, Liverpool and Everton, Liverpool particularly, are an international global brand. They must be very careful who they associated with. Remember, Barcelona for years had no sponsorship on their shirts.
Mm.
And it meant that everybody looked at a Barcelona shirt and they saw one brand and one brand alone, and that was FC Barca.
So do you think, just to conclude this conversation, because we've got to get the travel on the show in a few moments' time, but do you think it's only a matter of time, let's say, that giving Liverpool as an example, that, you know, in 5 years' time it'll be a case of live from the McDonald's Stadium? Is the writing on the wall?
I don't think Liverpool... it would be a foolishness, even above the Newcastle foolishness, to rename Anfield.
Yeah.
Or Goodison Park, for that matter. Mm. But if they do move to the new ground in Stanley Park, like if Everton moved to Kirby, both of which I actually think are quite unlikely, personally. But if they do move, then renaming becomes tempting.
Yeah.
But you've got to be very careful whether it's appropriate. We know that Arsenal has worked, but if it was such a good idea, why hasn't Wembley renamed? Mm. Why is the Welsh National Stadium still called the Millennium Stadium?
Yes, yeah.
When surely that would be a good thing for somebody to brand if you know, there are two sides to this story, and one is a short-term, quick fix. The other is long-term common sense.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers, and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Barks takes on the Pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donut.
Today's donut is not a local donut, it's for an organisation in London. It's Transport for London, because, well, they've become a little bit prudish, dare I say it. You know Calendar Girls, that great film? You know Calendar Girls, Helen Mirren, a load of other folk as well, Julie Walters, great movie, isn't it? Based on the true life story of the WI somewhere in the United Kingdom who decided to do a charity calendar, a naked one. And contains that immortal line, I think we're going to need bigger buns. Well, you know I was going to say she's an actress. I mean, I don't know, that's the best way to describe her. Kelly Brook? You know Kelly Brook? A lot of men listening to this will know who Kelly Brook is. And if you read He Magazine, you'll know who Kelly Brook is. Kelly Brook is starring in Calendar Girls. She's doing it on stage somewhere. And they've done a big poster campaign in London. And one of the scenes, as you know, if you've seen the film, or even the stage show, has one of the women with some patisserie, the best way of describing it, covering up her assets. Well, she's been ordered to cover up her assets. This is Kelly Brook with some extra large iced buns, because this poster campaign apparently is a little bit raunchy. The 32E chested model upset Transport for London. They got all hot under the collar with the latest poster campaign for Calendar Girls, which is now a stage show. K Kelly, who's 29, posed naked with two buns covering her babs. Stay with me on this. Transport for London decided it was just too saucy and demanded the buns were made larger, so her cleavage was covered up. Now, I'm looking at this picture. There's nothing offensive about this original shot. In fact, I'd go so far to say that if you're unfortunate enough to work in London and have to put up with a nasty, daily, grimy commute, and particularly if you're a bloke, though, you know, might appeal to ladies as well, if you were to see this picture of Kelly Brook using a couple of Belgian buns to cover up her baps, it would just give your day that little bit of sunshine, a little bit of light relief, if you pardon the expression. A Transport for London spokesperson said they'd asked for a few tweaks. Let's be honest, not the best use of language. Well, I only have one thing to say about this. Transport for London. You lot, never mind the babs, never mind the buns, your donuts.
Dunkin's Donuts.
Find out more about City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks at citytalk.fm. We hope you've enjoyed the Dunkcast. If you have, please download again next week.
Right then, this is the bit at the end of the podcast which contains some quite rude stuff. Just to recap, during the week on The Breakfast Show, we did something about words you might use to describe parts of your body or parts of your partner's anatomy, and I asked you to text them in. It turned out I couldn't read them out on the radio, but I did promise that I'd do it on this podcast. So listen to me. If you're under the age of 18, stop listening now. If you're faint-hearted and easily offended, stop listening now. Right, a number of people got in contact. This is the stuff I was desperate to read out on the air, but producer Mick quite rightly said I couldn't do it because I'd probably get sacked. Phrases, names, nicknames that you use to describe parts of your body or maybe the part of a body of your partner. Stian Crosby. Duncan, I call my penis Russell the Love Muscle. That's Stian Crosby. One here from Robin Bebbington. Actually, I'll do that last because that's my favourite one. One here from Jake at Ellesmere Port. Donger. And I'm not talking about my nose dunk. One here that's anonymous. And I don't know if I get the joke here. Maybe I'm missing out on something. It says, my missus calls my thing Burke. How's Burke today? Doesn't really make sense, does it? The mighty Mick on the text. Duncan, my manhood is called the Redundant Knight because it doesn't lance a lot. Very good, that, isn't it? Very clever. But finally, my favourite one came in from Robin Bebbington. And this is clever. This is good. Hi, Dunk. I call the little fella Oscar because he's an award a lady should be proud to receive. It doesn't come much better than that. I think you will agree. Keep your suggestions coming in. We might do them on next week's Dunkcast or Dunkcast. The best way of getting in contact is my email address, Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, Duncan @citytalk.fm.